never the underdog.
Yes, sir. Sir.
He's never the underdog. Yes, sir. Final four now.
What's up, Duke fans? Welcome to the Devil's Den podcast. This is your host, Raul Clement, joined by my co-hosts, Josh Smith and Dustin Chu. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to give you a little context about what you're listening to. So this is part three of our championship series, where Josh, Chu, and I will be discussing the 2010 championship team. The episode was originally supposed to cover 2010 and 2015, but once we recorded it, we realized we'd been talking for an hour and a half. Since we try to keep our episodes to under an hour, we decided we should split this into two parts. This one covering 2010 and the next covering 2015. So any references you might hear to 2015 are just artifacts of that. At any rate, we hope you enjoy. Be sure to check out the first two parts of our championship series. Thanks again for listening.
So I had the pleasure of kind of doing some of the research on this one and going back and watching some games. So we'll start with 2010, but really, before I kind of just jump in there, I feel like this one, kind of like some of our other title teams, you can't really tell the story of 2010 without kind of looking at some of the history. So if you're not familiar with that team, you know, the starters were John Shire, Nolan Smith, Kyle Singler, Lance Thomas, Brian Zubek. That's three seniors, two juniors. So pretty old, pretty experienced Duke team. But so they arrived right at the end of JJ's career. And so for me, JJ had such a huge impact. We talked about that a little bit on the pod already. You know, we were kind of pretty much just at the top of college basketball for a while there. We didn't win one, ironically, with that squad. But I remember the 06 team, I think it was either Sports Illustrated or something else had like all of us with like the Duke, Who Can Stop Duke or Here Comes Duke or whatever it was. I mean, just loaded team. 07 plays out a little bit differently, and that's when this kind of crop of guys turn up to campus. So 07, 22-11, we just couldn't win close games. We lost 4-1 possession games that year, if you can remember that. So just pretty frustrating. Get to the tournament, first round loss to VCU. If y'all remember, Eric Maynor pretty much just kind of torched us, lit us up.
Buzzer beater, right?
I think. Yeah.
Over McRoberts.
Yep. Yeah. So I think were we the 11 seed and they were the 7, or were we the 7 and they were the 11?
We were the 6, I believe.
We're 6. So yeah. 6 and 11. Okay. Yeah. 6 and 11. So, you know, that didn't start out that great. Right. But that introduced us to this recruiting class that is eventually going to end up national champions. Go forward another year, 08. And the cool part about this is each year, this team just gets better every time. Right. This group just continues to kind of get better. And while he wasn't here in 10, we do have Gerald Henderson also as part of this class. So, Shu, you want to jump in?
I think that 07 team at the time, that was the youngest team K had ever had, I believe, right?
It had to have been. I mean, that team was really young. Gerald Henderson was also a part of that recruiting class with Shire and Thomas and Zubek. So 08, this was kind of, I didn't really remember this when I went back and looked, maybe just because I was in college during this time. So watching these games weren't super clear headed. This 08 started 22-1.
Yeah.
22-1. And so when you think
10-0 in the ACC as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you think back on that team as kind of just like, oh, you know, whatever, they finished 28-6. So it didn't finish out very well, but 22-1 is remarkable to start the year. We just ran out of gas. I believe 08 was, we had like Singler playing kind of like center a little bit there. And he just kind of wore down. He was great for us though during the year, just kind of wore down. So we get one more further. We lose in the second round to West Virginia. You might remember they had Joe Alexander, Deshaun Butler. Pretty good West Virginia team. Everybody comes back except for, who would we have lost in 08? Maybe DeMarcus Nelson graduated 08, or maybe that was 09. So pretty much return basically the core group of guys. 09 starts, same thing. Start the season 18-1. Clearly, you know, looking pretty good. Finished 30-7. So a little bit, you know, finished a little stronger than 08 did. But they get one more round further. We go to the Sweet 16 and just kind of get ran off the court. Villanova pretty much torched us. That was the Scotty Reynolds, Dante Cunningham. They kind of got us pretty good there. And then Henderson leaves. I think he went, He went lotto, like 10 to 14 range, somewhere in there.
Ninth.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. To the Bobcats. Yep.
Yeah.
Big loss because then we really didn't have a backcourt, right? So at that point, we're sitting there with John Shire, Nolan Smith, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
because
Elliot Williams transferred.
So we're really thin. In comes sharpshooter Andre Dawkins, who was originally scheduled to come the next year. He comes a year early, gives us that little bit of a boost, a little bit of depth there.
Was he our first player to come in early?
I was looking for that.
It's a recent trend now that we've had Bagley and guys do, but I want to say that Andres was the first guy, at least that I remember, that we talked into reclassifying and coming early.
Yeah, first I can remember. So,
yeah. And you could tell, you know, like he was pretty fresh coming in, right? Baby face. Yeah. had some huge moments for us, though. I'll talk about that here in a little bit. So 10 starts, right? So we have a team with the core that finished 22-11. Then they started the next season 22-1 before then the next one 18-1. So they're veterans at this point. They know what it takes to win. We've lost in the first round, the second round, and the Sweet 16. So they were hungry, right? And I think that's really a key thing to think about with this team of cohesiveness and just what it takes to go through it. We've talked about 1990 and what that did for 91. So this year it was business, undefeated at home. If you remember, I think Lance made those cool shirts. I had one back in the day of the design that he made. They did had some pretty, you know, kind of questionable losses. We lost early at Wisconsin. That's not a big deal, but we kind of got blown out pretty bad against Georgetown and NC State, who just, you know, that's just the theme of Duke over the last 20 years. For some reason, NC State seems
to. We lost at Georgia Tech. But that Georgia Tech team was good.
Maryland. You know, we split the ACC regular season with Maryland. Before this past year, that was the last time we had a share of it. So we went 12 years there. They head into the tournament, you know, won the ACC tournament. They beat Virginia. They beat Miami with Frank Haith. If you remember this, you know, Kay throws the jacket and then Frank Haith copies him and Fro throws his jacket too. That was a pretty tight game. Then in the championship, they had Georgia Tech. That was a really great game too. Shire hit a big three in the corner over there. Dawkins had a huge dunk going down the lane.
Yep. It's in Greensboro.
Yep.
And that was a game. I think we were up like 7 or something late. And then Georgia Tech made this late run,
furious
cut it to run. And then Shire comes off that curl and hits that right wing three there, kind of almost falling away, sort of bad form on it too. Goes in, puts us up 4. We end up winning.
Yeah. And Shire had that like sideways kind of spiral, on his shot, if you ever saw the way it came off his hand. And he was actually in a pretty bad slump around that time too, heading into the NCAA tournament. He had been on a month-long slump, horrific shooting slump. I mean, you know, otherwise he was great. And I believe I have to go back and look, but I think before the Jones brothers stepped on campus, John had one of the best or highest assist to turnover ratios I think we've seen at Duke.
Him and Wojo too, and Quinn Cook had a really good one as well. All of them were around 3-1.
Yeah, I think Shire had like 30 or 40 some assists that season before he had his first turnover or something, if I want to remember that correct. It was just absurd. So, you know, we're heading into the tournament and I want to kind of step back here briefly. So the main thing of this season that most of us probably remember, if you think about that season, is the breakout of Brian Zubek. Mm-hmm. So we start the season, you know, we're playing well, we're doing well. And then about halfway through, I think it's that Maryland game.
Yep.
Zubek goes in the starting lineup. I think he had like 16-17 or just something just absurd. And it really just that sparked us. We won 18 of the final 19 games and ended up finishing the season 35-5. But he was really that catalyst. Like he just changed. We really went all in on kind of rebounding. You know, I'll talk about that in a second, but his rebounding percentages and rebounding rates were just absurd. And so before I jump into the tournament, though, since I've been talking here for about 20 minutes, what do y'all got think about when you hear 2010? What originally kind of or initially pops up for you?
Well, mine's a little funny. Back in college, when I worked at the golf course, I met Coach Bucky Waters up there one day. And I think I had been kind of complaining to him about Brian Zubek, to be honest with you. This was like in his sophomore year. And, you know, early on in Brian's career, whenever he caught the ball, especially on offense, he pretty much an automatic whistle for traveling or something. You know, he lost the ball. So I was complaining about this guy. And Bucky Waters looked at me and said, Brian Zubek will win Duke a national championship before he leaves. And I thought he was probably the craziest person to ever talk to me. And, you know, 3 years later, here you are. So shouts to Bucky, Coach Waters, man.
Yeah, Buck that off. Transformation from Zubek was just incredible. Had a lot of foot surgeries too early on in his career. Yeah. But yeah. Rule, what about you?
I think about style of play for sure. The slow pace that we played at, just not really another Duke team that compares to that. And then the dominant offensive rebounding. You know, I think about Zubek grabbing a board and just kicking it out, not even looking at the basket, kicking it out to Nolan or Shire or Singler, all there standing on the wing waiting to hit a three or, you know, attack a closeout or whatever. So that's the main thing. And then the other thing I think about is November 13th, 2009, which was the day that Harrison Barnes committed to UNC. And we all thought he was going to be our savior. UNC had just won a national championship. That was a Friday the 13th, in fact. So, you know, a kind of doubly unlucky day. And we were playing, I think it was UNCG that night. Nolan had to sit out a couple of the first couple games of the season because he'd played like a game with a shot clock in DC or something silly. And then Duke had self-reported. So he sat out those couple of games. So we're watching a Duke team without Nolan Smith, the only athletic player on the team, pretty much. And, you know, they end up beating UNCG by 20 because it's a team full of seniors and they're much more talented than UNCG. But just watching that team and watching how slow they played and not having that kind of injection of any kind of athleticism with Nolan, that was like one of my lowest moments as a Duke fan, you know, given that we just missed out on Harrison Barnes. I'm like, what's happened to this program?
Yeah, and UNC had just won the title, right?
No, right, exactly, so. Right. And it looked like, you know, Roy Williams had kind of delivered the knockout punch to Kay.
Yeah.
And just, you know, to win a title, however many months later, that would be 8 months, whatever it was, is pretty incredible.
Yeah. And that's when all of the, like, you know, there's a lot of criticism about, you know, well, maybe Kay should stop focusing so much on the Olympics and should focus more on, I remember all of that talk and you start to kind of buy into it a little bit. But I think what really tells the tale too of this season is, you know, we talk a lot about be a star in your role and this team really exemplifies that. I mean, Singler, Shire and Smith together are just this like three-headed beast, really. Like all of them are averaging like over 17 and a half a game. And then after that, it's like 5 points, 4 points, 4 points. You just had a bunch of guys that bought in, you know, Zubek comes to mind. Lance Thomas comes to mind. Miles Plumlee played a big role on that team as well. You know, Mason's a freshman, Ryan Kelly's a freshman. So they're still a little bit of ways off of being, you know, the 2012, 2013 versions of themselves that we're pretty familiar with. But everyone just kind of bought in and just kind of played their role. Bro mentioned us playing slow. It's very slow from Duke standards. So we're like 229th in tempo, according to KenPom, which is kind of wild. We still have the number one offense, you know, so it just goes to show kind of what we were doing. And I think defensively is where the biggest adjustment came from. We kind of played that like UVA, kind of not really so much pack line, but sagged off, really kept Brian Zubek kind of down in the paint, let him just anchor that and become a rebounding monster.
So it's like a complete flip from the 2001 title team, right? The 2001 team was a helter-skelter defense, like we're swarming, double teaming, trapping, forcing turnovers, shooting a bunch of threes, just running up and down the floor. Whereas 2010, it was, we're playing a half court offense, slow pace. And then, like you said, on defense, just not really getting passing lanes, playing that uptight man to man, like we're kind of accustomed to doing. So yeah,
very difference. Fundamentally sound is where this team made their money. You know, we didn't turn the ball over to rank top 15th and turnovers committed. We rebounded 40% of our misses, you know. Our field goal percentage was great.
Yeah, I mean, the tap outs, that's what I always like. Even if Zubek and Thomas couldn't control, like,
so many. Offensive rebounds to threes was just, we made a living on that. You know, we're top 25 in the country in 3-point percentage. Meanwhile, we're second in limiting the opponents to three. So that's always going to be a great recipe, just math. We were also really good from the free throw. We didn't beat ourselves, I guess, is what this comes to, right? We played really smart. There wasn't really any kind of ego. It wasn't really kind of, it didn't matter who got the shot. You know, I think Grant Hill said one time that, you know, it didn't matter who scored as long as Duke scored. Yeah. You know, and that reminds me of 2010. You know, if you can't tell, I had a lot of fun going back and watching some of these. So we start out, we head into the NCAA tournament as a one seed in the South, which is going to be kind of familiar when we talk about 2015 as well. Didn't really have any kind of scares early on. You know, we played Arkansas Pine Bluff, beat them by 30, 73-44. Sinclair kind of just did whatever he wanted to. Go into the second round, we play Cal, and I think who was it, Chu or O or Tanoff one that Jamal Boykin was on that team. So yeah,
back to California.
And what I remember about that team is they were tiny too. And I've rewatched that game maybe like two times over the last 10 years. And the thing that stands out is they had no chance. You know, Zubek standing there in the middle, and he's 7'1", and their tallest guy's like 6'8". It was over basically within 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, just looking at the scores as we compare them to, you know, some of the ones from like 01, like I think 01, right. we hit like over 90 points, like one twice in the tournament, two or three times in the tournament, over 80 a few times. 2010 didn't even get to 80 once in the tournament. Right. But the margin of victory is still pretty similar. So after Cal, we go to the Sweet 16. We had Purdue. And if you don't remember, that was it Robbie Hummel, I think, that played for Purdue, was really good, but he had a torn ACL, I think, during that game. He had like back-to-back ACL tears, but he was a really great player.
Yeah, they would have been possibly a one seed had he not gotten injured. And then they kind of faltered at the end of the year, and the committee kind of penalized them because they knew he was going to be out.
Yep. And the significance of this game is where Shire, this is where Shire kind of breaks the slump, mm-hmm. right? He goes for 18-5-4. No one has 15-5-4. Obviously, with Robbie out, Singer did whatever he wanted, 24-8. Singer just really had a great tournament overall, really. So we get past Purdue 70-57. And this is when things get a little bit dicey. And I remember vividly when the brackets were out, I think I remember Jay Will specifically, but a lot of guys were picking Baylor, right? Like everyone was picking Baylor to come out of this region, playing in the South. If we go back and remember the Gottlieb's alarmingly unathletic comment, right? We just couldn't stack up to a team with a bunch of athletes. So we come into that, and I think we might have had like a little bit of chip on our shoulder or just whatever. We fed off of it. It was a great game. We ended up winning by 7, but just a tremendous game. And this is what the one to me that puts Nolan on the map. You know, Nolan had 29 and just was just phenomenal. I mean, in the lane, you talked about those kick out threes. One of my favorite plays in Duke history is we kick out a three. And I can't remember if it was just Lance getting an offensive rebound, but I want to say it was off of a missed free throw from us. Lance kicks it out. No one gets the ball. And you see Kay right here and you see him yell something. And no one like hesitates for a second and then shoots it. And he turns to Kay and they kind of dap each other up. Yep. Kay's telling him to shoot that. One of my just all time, just favorite moments right there. Cause you see no one kind of acknowledge it, you know, Kay being the empowerment guy that he is. But Shire was also rock solid again, 25-4. We mentioned Andre Dawkins earlier. I don't know if we win this game without Andre. So Andre didn't play a whole lot, but he hits two huge threes in the first half. The one at the end cut it to three. So we go into half, I think down three or we're down three. But he hits a three like in the corner there that, you know, is down six. If he misses that, it's a run out. We're looking at like an 8 to 9 point kind of hole. He drills that. We come out in the second half and just kind of do whatever we want a little bit. We outscore him 46-36 and just kind of run away with it. Lance was huge that game. He had a deep like 18 footer right there where, you know, he showed off the jump shot a little bit.
The
tip slam little put back dunk. Yep.
I think it was an and one too.
It was
off a missed three and he puts it back and gets fouled.
Yeah. And just watching this team, it was really fun to see like how the bigs operated. So Zubek and Lance coming up and immediately kind of redirecting out the shooters, and Shire, Smith and Singler, just all of them move so well off the ball. It was just really
also
beautiful.
Had like watch Miles could come up and set a screen and roll. I mean, you guys remember Miles, and that was the thing about Gottlieb's comment that, like, in hindsight, like, okay, yeah, there were a bunch of tall white guys, but Miles Plumlee was pretty athletic. Didn't he set
Mason too? Yeah.
And Mason as well. But didn't Miles set the combine record for like max vert for a guy over 6'10"? at one point.
Yeah, and that's what got him drafted.
Got him drafted in the first round. Yeah, exactly.
I did like Hayes Byrne, though, right? When he was like, well, Golly would be an expert at being a warmly unathletic. So
I think Nolan was like, because at the time, one of Mason or Miles was out. And he was like, just wait till Miles gets back. Then we're going to be even more athletic than people don't think we are, or something like that. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. So we took it personally, right? Yep. We took that personally a little bit. And we kind of, that was, I think, when, myself for sure, after that Baylor game, I started to really kind of think we can win a title, you know, like we can win a national championship. And especially once West Virginia kind of helped us out a little bit and beat Kentucky on the other side of the bracket. Another kind of weird parallel there to 2015. If you don't remember, that Kentucky team was absolutely dominant. Eric Bledsoe, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, they were loaded.
Did they have, was Patrick Patterson on that team still too?
I think so. Cause I think he might've been, he was the holdover from the previous era. Was that Gillespie who was coaching
Billy Gillespie? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So he hadn't left. Because the previous era, I think it was like Jody Meeks and Patterson. And I think Meeks graduated, but Patterson decided to stay.
I remember Jody Meeks. Yeah, that's a deep cut there. Nice. I think he had like 50 in a game. But yeah. Anyway. So we get to the Final Four. And thanks for West Virginia for doing that. We end up matching up against West Virginia. This is a really fun game to go back and watch. If you just kind of like, you know, blowouts and just great basketball, we throttle these guys. I mean, we end up winning 78-57. Nolan, Kyle, and John combined for 63. The game's never in question. I think, too, I had in my head a little bit of like, oh, well, that Duke had won because Butler went down. So in my head, I was just thinking like, well, I guess Butler must have went down early. I don't really remember it. He played 28 minutes. Right. And so it was unfortunate that he went down.
Like 8 minutes left. And I think we were up like
game was over.
Yeah. We were up 15 at that point.
And just the icing on the cake is Jordan Davison coming in and just drilling a top of the key three there.
Well, it's nice too, because I remember Chris Spatola talked about that second round loss to West Virginia. Yeah.
It's a revenge game.
And how we kind of got punked by those guys, mm-hmm. basically, 2 years earlier. So, you know, nice to come out and take care of business there.
Who was the small guy on the team? He was the one who was talking a bunch of trash after they beat us in the second round.
You talking about Joel Alexander?
No, the first time.
Or are you talking about?
Yeah, no, but he was on the team. He was on both teams, and he talked trash after they beat us in the second round, and because Joel Alexander was already gone, I believe.
Yeah. Joe was gone. Ebanks was there, but he was a sophomore. Yeah. It could have been Casey Mitchell was one of their, I'm just looking at it now. I think he was their guard.
I'll pull it up. It doesn't matter. But yeah, whoever it was like, it was the guy who Singler accidentally elbowed like a couple minutes into the game.
Mm. Oh, that was Mazzulla.
Yeah.
He didn't elbow him. He hit him with like his chin.
Right. Yeah. You know, it was called incidental contact, but I do think it mattered. It kind of showed like we're not going to get punked.
Right.
You know, that was like it was accidental, but it was still an opening statement of we're going to play tough and we're going to play physical.
Yep.
And that game was physical.
It was, yep.
The Baylor game.
and that Baylor game really prepared us well, I think, for just coming into that Final Four environment, getting our head right, and then to come in and just dominate, because it sets up for the ultimate trap game, right? So you beat West Virginia, and then you got Butler sitting over there, and at the time, you know, they were the media darlings, you know, and 11, Butler ends up going back to the title game. And
Butler beat Michigan State?
Michigan State, yeah, I think.
Because they had just got crushed by Carolina in 09. That game was like in Michigan, wasn't it?
Yeah,
in 09.
Yeah. That was, yeah.
So then they go back to the Final Four in 2010. Yeah.
Yeah.
But lose to Butler.
And I think, again, it was just the typical Michigan State thing. I think Butler was a 5 seed, but Michigan State might have been like a 7 seed or like a, they might have been even like lower than Butler. So, you know, Brad Stevens, Matt Howard, you know, the Togate with Kyrie there. He's on that Butler team. Gordon Ronald Hayward, Norred. Obviously. Yeah, Norred, Shelvin Mack. That was a really good team. Really good team.
Oh, yeah.
And this game is not one that I went back and watched a whole lot because it's just, it's better to go back and kind of watch the mini version and get the highlights because it is a slog, right?
Like, or the, just or the last 2 minutes. The last 2 minutes is fun to watch. But
yeah, the last two is fun to watch. But I went back and I watched it all this time. And man, I miss Kyle. Singler was just so good in this game. I mean, just it reminded me too of like not just the shots he was taking, but like as soon as the ball touched his hand, he's looking to score. Like every time, coming off short curls, coming off like corner fades, it didn't matter where he was on the floor. Just wanted to go. And the most impressive thing is not only did Kyle lead us in offense, he also shuts down Gordon Hayward, who went like 2 for 9 or 2 for 11 or something like that. Really kind of just made his life hell.
And Kyle, I'd have to look back. I don't remember, but it seems like he was one of our like last like top five recruits to stay all four seasons.
Or just more than one.
More than one. Yeah, at that point. But remember, we had talked about an earlier podcast. We kind of hit that lull where we were missing on those top guys, but we did get Kyle. And Kyle, I think, was it the OJ Mayo? And I know he was with Kevin Love, but I think OJ Mayo was the number one in their class. And Kyle was like four.
Yeah, 4 or 5. Yeah.
So to have that for 4 years, I mean.
Yeah, he could have left any year, really.
Every year
he was projected in the first round. He was never projected in the lottery. Otherwise, who knows what he would have done. But he was always projected late first, and he just kept staying. So I love him for that.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, defense definitely won us this game. You know, I talked about kind of limiting Hayward, but we limit Mack, Shelvin Mack and Hayward were probably there to kind of like go to along with Norred. But we shut those guys down. It's combined for 7 for 25. You know, Shire had some big plays, huge tip in where he kind of just barely gets his hand up there on the rim. You know, the last kind of 2 minutes, I think, like Raul was saying, is what everyone remembers. So what you might not remember, it's to me, is the best sequence is Zubek and Kyle playing defense on Hayward as he comes down. Zubek ices him just enough, or actually Kyle fights through the screen just enough to force Hayward full baseline, and then Zubek can get the hand out.
Exactly. And then he turns around and gets the rebound. Yeah.
Turns around, gets the rebound, gets it strong, catches it, gets fouled, goes up, makes the first one. One of the best moments too. If you're kind of a sappy guy like sports stuff, when it comes to me, you see his dad over there just cheering like hell for Zubek. And you know, knowing Zubek's just kind of history at Duke, for him to have that moment, the ball in his hands, he makes the first one, puts us up 2, and then the infamous, you know, like, you know, Zubek, you know, miss it. And so K opts to miss it, and just because they didn't have any timeouts, just see what happens. He misses it, did a pretty decent job at missing it. It's actually pretty hard to do that when you're trying to miss. Missed high and long, and they come down with the rebound. You know, we won, so it's not a big deal. But like whoever the ref was that didn't call that moving screen where Singler just gets leveled. Like, that's just ridiculous. But whatever. Hayward puts up a prayer, and every time you watch it, it looks good. Like it looks good, and it just hangs and hangs. You know, fortunately for us, he misses it. Zubek grabs his hair. Everyone's just going nuts. I think Kyle probably still in concussion protocol over there while that's happening. But, you know, we leave Indianapolis with yet another net, and K wins number 4. So some of the big takeaways as I was watching it, obviously Singler was named Final Four's most outstanding player. And what I want to kind of toss out to you, this has been discussed a lot, but did we mess up by not retiring number 12?
I mean, that can always be rectified, right? I mean, it's not too late. I would have liked to see him get retired at the time, but I don't think we fully understood the impact that one and done was going to have, because really our, you know, first conscious one and done player that we had recruited came in the next year with Kyrie Irving, a guy that we knew was only going to stay 1 year no matter what. You know, Dang, we didn't know that. Magetti, we didn't know that. So considering we were just about to make the transition into the one and done era, I don't think that Kay or anybody else on the staff really understood what that was going to do to kind of player numbers and legacy. So by current standards, I think his jersey needs to be retired because we're just not going to see anybody achieve those previous standards. But at the time, it was understandable not to, because he hadn't won National Player of the Year. I mean, I still think there was an argument with Final Four MOP, top five in points and like top 10 in rebounds, I believe.
I think he's 4 in points and 6 in rebounds.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. There was definitely an argument at the time, but he hadn't won any major national awards. And that was kind of the bar that we had set. So I think it made sense. But now I think we need to relook at it. What about you, Shu?
Yeah. In 100% agreement. I think at the time, and even at the time, like you said, I mean, finishing your career, what he wasn't even finished at that point. He still had another year. Mm-hmm. But to finish in the top 10 of two major statistical categories, Final Four, like you said, Final Four most outstanding player. Don't know. It wasn't a first team All American, I don't believe. Might have been second team.
Yeah, second or third, I think.
Yeah. Without any major national awards, at the time, I guess I understood it. But like you said, in hindsight, we're probably just not going to get anything close to that again, at least not for the near future. So,
unless NIL just completely changes the landscape in a way we can't imagine, I don't see it happening. So,
hasn't helped us yet so far.
Nope.
Yeah. I mean, I think even like at the time, there was a lot of people that were pretty clamoring for it. And especially by the time we got into like 2014, 2015, it was going back and looking and saying, what about Kyle? Because just looking through some of this stuff, so he's tied for the record for games played at Duke. Yeah. At 148, right? He also played in 148 consecutive games.
Yeah.
So he didn't miss a game. He started 147 of those. So He started all but one game. He owns the record for minutes played. Of those 148 games that he played in, we won 125 of them. Just the fourth player at Duke to have over 2,000 points and 1,000 rebounds. And some of these stats you can kind of get out there and kind of get a little kind of wonky with it, but cherry picking. He's the only player in the history of the ACC to have 2,000 points, 1,000 rebounds, 250 threes, 200 assists, 100 block shots, 100 steals. Yeah. Only player, one of one, right? Like that.
Yeah.
You start to go back and look at some of this stuff. Only Art Heyman and Christian Laettner had 600 points 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
Kyle's the only one with those. So it's
and then you start looking Christian at some of the guys that he's above in the scoring list and they've got their jersey retired. So you're like, he kind of fits in here. It's not like it'd be out of the
right. He never had the peak kind of like the J Will or the Nolan year where you're just going to average 22 a game. Yeah. Of those 148 games that he played in, 129 of them, he had a double figures.
Yeah.
And 129 of the 148, he finished with 16-7 for his career average. So, I think the case is pretty strong, especially now when you're looking at an era where will we ever retire a jersey again?
You said, I think we played him out of position at least one of the seasons where
he's playing center for a little while center, there. Yeah. Yep.
Well, here's a question though. Okay, so to my mind, the player who would have the second best case to get his jersey retired is our current coach, and he'd be the one making the decision to retire Singler's jersey.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that impacts things in any way. I doubt Shire would be petty like that, but it's just interesting to think about. It's like, I don't know if you guys have another nominee, but I can't really think of anybody else who would be on that tier. It'd be like Shire, Zengler, then honestly Nolan would probably be third. So
yeah, maybe Grayson.
Grayson could have gotten there.
If he had just finished a little bit better, but
He didn't really. And also, just as to go back earlier, I said that Lance designed that shirt with the undefeated. That was Kyle.
It was Kyle.
Zengler designed the shirt. I remember having one of those. But it would be interesting to see if John's going to go back and look at some of that stuff. But
I think that would be awesome of him, honestly, to kind of honor his friend that way. And be a real nice feel good moment.
And Kyle was just the ultimate warrior out when he stepped onto the lines, right? Like diving, like just didn't care what it, or whatever it took to win. That's what he wanted to do.
Going over scores tables, cut up multiple times. I remember he's going toe to toe with Booker from Clemson. And if you want to go back and look at him, dude was an ox, you know? And so they're just going at it.
I believe didn't he play hurt his entire senior year? I think kind of impacted his shooting.
Had the knee surgery or the cleanup, the microscopic cleanup or whatever. Had to wear the brace. Really messed up his mobility too, right? He was not able to kind of get to the rim like he was. But before we do get out of here, I've talked about Zubek, but I do think we need to hammer it home that what made this team so good was Brian Zubek, like what he was able to do at the end. So Duke finishes with, like I mentioned, a 40% offensive rebounding rate, which is absurd. Zubek is 21.5% offensive rebound. And so just that's the best in the country. Right. Yeah. Like, so 21% of the misses is going straight to Zubek. Like, that is just, that's wild. You know, like every five shots, you're getting one back, basically.
I'm glad you brought him back up because to me, those final 2 minutes are all about Zubek.
Yeah.
And it's like his defensive masterpiece. We didn't even mention half the things he did. There's one point where he guards the inbound and they can't get it in. So they have to use their timeout. So that means they don't have a timeout on that final possession. They might not use it anyway, but. Then there's another point, I believe, where he tips the ball out of bounds, so they have to re-inbound it. Then we've obviously mentioned, you know, guarding Hayward on that last shot, getting the rebound, all that stuff. But then after he purposely misses that free throw, he does a hard hedge as Hayward is running up the court, and it slows him down. He probably has to take the shot from 5 to 10 feet further out. So maybe if he's, you know, 10 feet closer, maybe he makes that shot.
Yep.
Yeah, so it's like his like Sistine Chapel kind of defense there, just those 2 minutes.
Yeah. What was it with Zubek that clicked, you guys think? Was it the beard? Was that what helped him? Like
just being healthy, I think, too, because he was able to put on a lot of weight, you know, he was able to get the lower body because he had like 3 foot surgeries in 2 years. And you know, if you remember Brian, when he came in, he was pretty rail thin as well. Skinny. And he had a lot of girth that last year, you know, he was just the shout out to the greatest of all talk, you know, he had a lot of acreage. They call it, you know, just acreage down there, just took up a lot of real estate. The beard was definitely there as well. But
Seth Greenberg said, he's a mountain masquerading as a man.
Yeah.
I was like that quote.
Perfect quote. And just the last question, cause I think it's kind of relative, before we jump to 2015, will this be the last Duke team to win a title that doesn't feature a freshman or that doesn't start a freshman?
I mean, for the foreseeable future, I think. I mean, if we get one in the next 3 years, it's going to have a freshman in the lineup, I would say. So 10 years from now, who knows where this all goes, you know, with the CBA, the NBA, if they start just letting 18-year-olds go back into the NBA. But it could be. I think it could be.
I mean, so let's see. How many freshmen did we bring in this year for the upcoming team? Six?
I think six or seven, yeah.
And we were saying that probably maybe three would go in the first round this next year.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you got maybe three of them to return, if we got lucky, you're still bringing in, what, five more freshmen the next season? So just by the, you know, statistically, I don't see any path to not playing a freshman for the foreseeable future. Again, unless NIL has an impact that we don't foresee down the road.
Right.
You know, it's had a slight impact if some people returning that wouldn't have, but I just don't think it's going to have an impact where you're going to see a team of all sophomores and juniors who were rated 5 stars. The only other way that it could happen is if our recruiting fell just off the map and then somehow we still won a title anyway. Which would be an interesting story, but that doesn't seem like a likely outcome. It seems like we're going to keep recruiting well as long as we keep winning.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying it to whether it's either good or bad, but I do think that kind of, to me, signals the shift. Like, you know, after 2010, it's a different model going forward.
Raul here again. Thought I'd jump in and thank you for listening because the ending was pretty abrupt. Once again, part two of this episode will cover 2015 and will be released sometime in the next few weeks. We have a couple of exciting guests coming up in the pod, so stay tuned for those as well. In the meantime, as always, keep the faces strong and the verve high. Go Duke.